Today's opening tip, Celtics rookie Carson Edwards throwing down a massive dunk against Harden and Russ last night. Paul, did you know he could do this?
No, I knew he could shoot the ball, but I didn't know he'd get up like that. That man's got a bright future.
Great defense by Westbrook and Harden. Way to really communicate there, guys.
Just credit the man for the dunk. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Brian Windhorst, in for Rachel Nichols, who is on assignment right now. I'm joined by our front office insider, Amin Alhassan, and you may remember the 2008 Finals MVP, Paul Pierce. Coming up, the league announced today that of the 344 players tested for COVID-19, zero have returned back confirmed positive tests. Does this mean the NBA needs to bring back the bubble for next season? We'll discuss that later. But first, James Harden put on a show in the Rockets' final scrimmage before the resumption of the regular season. Harden hit 7 threes in the first half and finished with 35 points, 8 rebounds, and 6 assists in just 29 minutes of action last night. But it wasn't all roses for the Rockets. Eric Gordon landed awkwardly on his left foot with over a minute remaining in the second quarter. Mike D'Antoni said that x-rays were negative on that injured left ankle. Rhodes reports that Gordon could miss 1 to 2 weeks. Paul, do you consider the Rockets to be the biggest threat to the Lakers or Clippers coming out of the West?
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're the only threat. For one, there's not a backcourt that's going to be better than James Harden and Russell Westbrook. You're talking about two former MVPs, and you can make the argument that James could be MVP this year. I mean, they got a top five player, a top 10 player. Those are the ingredients you need to be in the finals. If you look every year, it features one of those two players. So they're the only threats out west to the Clippers and Lakers.
Yeah, I mean, if we want to talk about are there threats to the Clippers and Lakers, I think realistically there aren't. But if there is one, to me, it's the Denver Nuggets. They're the only team with the requisite amount of depth with an MVP candidate and that's disciplined on both sides of the ball. I think the problem with Houston, to me, is they got a lot of talent, but they just kind of really pick up game talent, run up and down the floor talent. And when it comes to the playoffs, where teams are game planning, where they're sitting around trying to exploit your weaknesses and take you away from your strength, I just don't think the Rockets have the personnel or the depth to battle that in terms of beating a team like the Clippers or the Lakers.
I'd like to just point out, you referred to two NBA MVPs as pickup game talent there, Mr. Alhassan.
I'm talking about the style of play, not the level of play.
I got you. I'm tweaking you. But I think the Rockets, the big thing is, can they hold up? We already have an injury. They don't have the depth that some of the other teams do. You mentioned the Nuggets, although they were down to 8 guys when the bubble started. And I definitely think that those guys have the swagger, because to beat the Clippers or Lakers, you got to have swagger. They're going to have it. They don't have to play any of the games in Los Angeles, so the home court advantage would be neutralized a little bit. I think it would be amazing if the Rockets could somehow get up to the number 4 seed through these seeding games and set up that second round possible matchup against the Lakers. I think that would be great theater. But we got to see Russ and Harden and all those supporting guys stay healthy to make it happen. I just don't know, if they got enough in the tank to do that, which we're going to see.
Brian, I'm going to tell you right now, if they see the Thunder in the first round, they won't even get to the second round. It won't even be a conversation about Lakers or Clippers. The Thunder will beat them in the first round.
No way.
I'm calling my shot right now.
No, they're going to upset Denver, and they're going to see the Clippers in the second round. You see it. Watch.
Well, I'm going to tell you, I think the Thunder are a very dangerous team. I don't know if I'd pick them against the Rockets, but watch the Thunder over these next 8 games. We're going to see how their continuity might show up. Hey, coming up, should we expect the Blazers to overcome the steep odds and earn the final playoff spot out west? Stick around to find out. But first, we are only 1 day away from the resumption of the NBA's regular season. We've been counting down the days by running back the top plays of this season so far. I know you've wanted to know. Here's number 1, courtesy of DeMar DeRozan.
You see Patty trying to contest that shot from behind, just swiped it over the top.
Oh, my goodness! DeMar DeRozan with a vicious slam.
Oh, no! Woo! My goodness. They might have to put Boucher in the concussion protocol. That was as bad and as filthy as it gets.
It's a make or miss league.
It's a make or make.
It's a make or miss league.
Make changes. Chances. ESPN's BPI gives the Suns a 1 in 500, ouch, chance to make the play-in round. Don't tell that to Devin Booker. He threw down this poster slam on Pascal Siakam. I mean, this is a tee-up for you, man. How many meaningful buckets do you think the Suns will have in these play-in games?
So you're saying there's a chance, huh? No, but Booker's going to ball out. I think Booker's going to be tremendous. But the Suns, this is meaningful?
No meaningful buckets, but this is a perfect situation for Booker because the Suns don't have any fans anyway.
All right. Miss traveling. How about Steven Adams grabbing this loose ball, somehow getting to his feet, and then finishes with the Eurostep layup? Paul, are you blaming this no call or Carmelo's lack of interest in the play for this result?
Come on now, that was a nice Euro. Steven Adams got that in his game. He's done that on multiple occasions that I've seen. Melo wasn't ready. He didn't see that coming. Come on, Melo.
Can you do that? Can you be on the ground, stand up, and then start dribbling?
He may have that in his game, but he doesn't have dribbling from his backside in his game. That was pretty damn impressive, if you ask me. Make hang time in the Grizzlies' final scrimmage yesterday. Man, Ja Morant was going hard. He threw down two impressive alley-oops. Paul, does Ja still feel like he's got something to prove in these upcoming games?
Absolutely. All this chitter-chatter about Zion maybe getting Rookie of the Year, he's putting that to rest. This is the Rookie of the Year, and you could argue he could have been an All-Star this year.
Yo, Zion's not winning Rookie of the Year, so Ja don't have to worry about that. But I find it delightful that the Grizzlies were so focused on this scrimmage. Now, it's not even a real game. This scrimmage as revenge for Andre Iguodala. Congratulations.
All right, well, let's move on to another team that's fighting for the eighth spot in the West. That's the Portland Trailblazers. As you know, we will be catching up on their previous journey to the bubble with another installment of our Previously On.
It's hard, like, waking up every morning, not knowing what to expect, not knowing what to do, wanting to give up hope.
Anthony was all the things the Rockets once said they wanted him to be. Active, extremely
doing PJ
sharp.
Like that. Oh, no, you ain't gonna put James on him. That's not cool.
I mean, that's all Melo, right? Yeah.
I think this is everything. They needed someone that can give them 20-point games.
I mean, do you watch that often?
Was it plugged up?
Yeah, it was plugged up. It needed some, and especially at the forward.
How would you characterize where you guys stand now?
Coming off the Western Conference Finals, we had high expectations. I feel like we in the middle of a test.
There's Lillard again from the logo. You cannot stop Damian Lillard right now.
They're going to have to move the three-point line back pretty soon.
Yeah. Russ has seen enough of these damn shots.
Damian Lillard, I believe that this is his best season.
61 points in the overtime victory.
He's delivered a heck of a performance, something that'll be remembered forever.
And that's the thing about Lillard. He doesn't care about the standings. He chases greatness no matter the circumstances.
He doesn't quit. He never thinks he's out of a game, never thinks he's out of a season.
If this team is healthy, they are a scary team in the 8th seed.
So I think we're just in the middle of a test of thinking it was going to be one way, and it's been the total opposite. And, you know, we just continuing to, you know, fight through it.
All right, ESPN's BPI only gives the Blazers a 26% chance of making it to the play-in tournament. They finally got a healthy Yusef Nurkic and Zach Collins and look like a dangerous team in the West. I mean, do you expect the Blazers to overcome their playoff odds and make it in?
Yeah, I mean, the great thing is they don't have to be the eighth seed. They just have to trigger the play-in, and I think they'll absolutely do that. Here's the thing. When BPI gives you those numbers, that's not with Yusuf Nurkic in the lineup. That's not with Zach Collins in the lineup. That's not with Carmelo Anthony rested, slimmer, and with a full training camp pretty much to go through the whole playbook. It doesn't factor those things in. It's just factoring off of what they did this season. So we're going to see a completely different Blazers team. And to me, when it comes to these moments where you need every possession to matter, every possession to count, young teams tend to blow it. Veteran teams tend to get it right. This is a veteran team competing at Sacramento, New Orleans, and Memphis, all very young teams. And finally, Damian Lillard is the best player out of any of those four teams. I'm going with the Blazers facing the Lakers in the first round.
No, I don't think so. I mean, this is the thing. You're in a situation unlike any other situation before. Yeah, the Blazers, they have their injuries taken care of, but they're not playing at home. And think about this. We're looking like kind of like a pickup game setting to where I think the advantage is going to be to the Memphis Grizzlies' young legs. They have nothing to lose. You got to understand, there's going to be so much more pressure on the Blazers to try to get eighth than Memphis trying to lose the eighth, because they've already overexceeded expectations no matter what happens. But I think the mountain is too high for them to climb. Three games behind Memphis, I think there's no chance they make it.
So I would pay attention very closely on Friday. Watch the jump from 3 to 4 Eastern, and then at 4 Eastern, find that Blazers-Grizzlies game, which is one of the most important games of the first week in the NBA restart. If the Blazers win that game, especially with Dame Lillard a little hobbled by a foot issue, I think it catapults them. If they lose, I think it catapults the Grizzlies. That, to me, is the thing that I'm looking for this week. Again, Friday afternoon, 4 o'clock, a strange time for a big game. But it is a big game. Now we move on to some news from this morning. The Mavericks have issued a 769-word statement to rebuke a Sports Illustrated story that reported a sexual assault allegation against Mavericks Director of Player Personnel, Tony Ronzoni, labeling the story as one-sided and quote, sensational form of journalism with multiple inaccuracies, mixed characterizations, and omissions. SI reported that a woman accused Ronzoni of forcing himself on her in his Las Vegas hotel room during the NBA's annual Summer League last July. The Mavericks then conducted an internal investigation, which has been closed. In their statement, the Mavericks said, quote, SI knows that this case was brought to the Mavs with a request for money and merchandise. However, the Mavs conducted a thorough investigation into all matters contained in the original email, including allegations of sexual assault. The formal investigation is currently closed, pending further credible evidence emerging, and a zero-tolerance policy remains. Now, a report in 2018 by Sports Illustrated that detailed a culture of harassment and abuse within the Mavericks' business operations led to the hiring of their CEO, Cynthia Marshall, and owner Mark Cuban's donation of $10 million to women's organizations. It also prompted the NBA to issue new requirements that include reporting instances of significant allegations of misconduct to the league. We will continue to monitor this story. Coming up, what are the chances that the NBA gets to have another bubble play out next season? But first, the head of the Players Association is warming to this idea. And here's what The Jump recommends for today. Mark Spears and Malika Andrews penned a piece for ESPN on how the NBA players and coaches have been using their platform to advocate for social justice since arriving at the Disney campus in early July. After the break, we will discuss plans for a joint Pelicans-Jazz protest Thursday night. Friday on ESPN, we'll have our first NBA restart seeding games from the Yay. Disney bubble in Orlando. Celtics-Bucks at 6:30 Eastern, 3:30 Pacific. Then it's Rockets and Mavs. Good night. Our coverage tips with NBA Countdown at 6 Eastern. Hey, good news for the Lakers. Anthony Davis returned to practice today and says he's planning to play Thursday night against the Clippers. AD's injured eye will be reevaluated this evening. Hey, Paul, if you're AD, how badly do you want to play in that game on Thursday night?
Well, these are tune-up games, and that's the way he's looking at it. You know, what this tells me about the Lakers, they're serious. They want to get this championship back. He's showing a sense of urgency. We already know what LeBron wants. This team is on a mission. And it shows me a lot that AD wants to get back out there because he's had a lot of little injuries throughout his career. And him to get out there right now, that's big for him.
Yeah, I hope he takes his time. We had a situation like that in Phoenix where Amari Stoudemire got poked in the eye in training camp, and then he ended up detaching his retina later in the season.
Why would you bring that up? That's terrible. It's a terrible thing to bring up right now, Amin. My God. On to better news. Andre Roberson made his first appearance in the starting lineup over 2.5 years on Tuesday. His last start came January 27, 2018, when he ruptured his patella tendon against the Pistons. I mean, what does it mean for Roberson's return to OKC's postseason hopes?
Man, Brian, if he just returned as 2018 Andre Roberson, that would be amazing in and of itself because he's an elite, elite, elite level defensive player, one that makes his team better defensively even as a wing player. But if he's going to shoot the three like that, that's a game changer. That's a game changer.
Yeah, that's big for them. It adds depth to what they've been doing. Nobody even expected Oklahoma City to be at this point. You know I didn't going into the season, you know, with the trades and all, but he adds depth to them, and they can possibly get you a first-round upset as a lower seed if they're all healthy.
They're beating the Rockets,
The thing about it is, they didn't, even though he hadn't played for 2 years, they didn't forget the scouting report on him because they haven't been guarding him at all on those three-point shots. If you even have to pay attention to him with his defensive ability, it's a big win for the Thunder. And that's a major factor. Speaking of big wins, the NBA announced today that, quote, 344 players tested for COVID on the NBA campus since the results were last announced on July 20th. Zero have returned confirmed positive tests. The head of the Players Association, Michelle Roberts, said yesterday that a bubble might be needed next season as well. Paul, do you like the idea of running the bubble back?
I the idea of running the bubble back if it's necessary. Boy, do I miss the fans in the stands, the ruckus road teams, the great home teams. I just miss that. The smell of the popcorn, I miss that. But if this is something they have to do, you got to do what you got to do.
We talked about this a little bit on Monday, Brian. The fact that they did a bubble now lets the NBA know how to do a bubble. I want to see multiple bubbles next year in different regional areas, and I want to see maybe like a spring break and a winter break so guys can go back and see their families.
Yeah, well, I think making predictions for next season is really hard, but the fact that things are working right now and Michelle Roberts is talking about this indicates the players are satisfied with how it's gone. The Pelicans and Jazz are discussing a plan surrounding the Black Lives Matter signage on the court and kneeling together during the national anthem on Thursday, sources told our colleague Malika Andrews. Adam Silver appeared on Good Morning America today.
The NBA has had a rule on its books that preceded David Stern, which was standing for the national anthem. Having said that, I respect peaceful protest. I'm not sure what our players will do when they come out tomorrow night, and we'll, of course, address it at the time, but I also understand these are highly unusual times.
I mean, how do you think the NBA is going to react ultimately when the players decide how they want to make a protest during the national anthem this week?
Yeah, I think they're not going to have any discipline. Obviously, they want to support the players in doing this. At the same time, as I said on The Jump a couple of weeks ago, this is not the full weight of NBA's power. The full weight we saw in Charlotte when they had the bathroom bill, how they forced local politicians to take a different stance. I'd like to see them to do more than that. More of that, excuse me.
Yeah, as long as they do stuff in unity. And like the commissioner says, he's in support of peaceful protest. You know, I give my hat off to Adam Silver because he's been at the forefront allowing the players to voice their opinion during these social injustice climate. And so whatever the players need to do to spark change or, you know, to get people talking about change, they're going to do it. And I applaud the commissioner for allowing that.
Yes, yeah, so much of what players have been doing leading up to the bubble and what they've been doing with their platforms in the bubble involves making statements on social reform and social justice. And it's a difficult thing for them to know how to express themselves in a way that is meaningful, because this is something that is going to be so closely watched across the spectrum. And, you know, they haven't done the anthem in the scrimmage games. The anthem has been saved for these moments coming up on Thursday and Friday. And so, I mean, it's obviously going to be a very important moment, not only for the league, but for the players who are involved themselves handling this statement and communicating the message they really want to send.
Yeah, you know, it's the statements matter and the kneeling matters, and that's all well and good. But I keep going back to, we had a prejudicial law on the books in North Carolina, and the NBA said if that law stands, that we're not going to do business there. That's the full power of this league in terms of bringing about change, not just T-shirts and floor decals and things of that nature. And so this is good, and I'm glad they're doing this, but I'm still expecting more.
Well, there is going to be more. Chris Paul, the president of the Players Association, talked about how they're close to an announcement with the owners about creating a fund of $300 million to send to causes that the players back. And that's going to be a big statement, too. Look, we're out of time at The Jump here today. We'll be back tomorrow at 3 Eastern when Rachel will be back and everybody will be much happier. Have a good day, everybody.